This is ACC CardiaCast, a series on the latest clinical education brought to you by the American College of Cardiology.
Boy, it's an exciting time to be a vascular medicine, vascular cardiologist interested in PAD, because even in the 14 years or so I've been in practice, there are a lot of new things interventionally and medically we can offer these patients. So it's now more important than ever to find patients who have this diagnosis, detect them so we can treat them. So I'm going to focus on PAD detection in the office. Okay, so we're going to talk about a simplified approach to identifying patients with PAD. We're going to start with a history to identify patients at risk and patients who have potential symptoms. Then we're going to move to our vascular physical examination. Then we're going to do an ankle brachial index. And then we're going to send to the vascular lab if and when needed. It's not always needed. So step one, first we need to identify those patients at risk for PAD. And I think this is pretty obvious to most of us cardiovascular specialists, older patients above the age of 65 years, patients who are a little bit younger, 50 plus, but who have risk factors for atherosclerosis, or who have a family history of PAD. That is a risk factor for PAD. Or even younger patients who have type diabetes and type 1 or 2 and one additional risk factor for atherosclerosis. And then, of course, looking for the patient with polyvascular disease. If a patient has known atherosclerotic disease in another vascular bed, such as coronary disease, carotid disease, visceral disease, renal disease, subclavian disease, those are patients who are at risk for having peripheral artery disease, the true polyvascular patient. And indeed, most patients with atherosclerotic vascular disease do have it in multiple vascular beds. It's just a question of whether you're going to look and find it or not. Okay, so next we're going to ask about potential symptoms of PAD, obviously ask about leg or foot ulcers, and then we do a simple screen for claudication. Do your legs hurt when you walk? Does the pain go away when you stop and rest? If the answer to those, within 10 minutes, if the answer to those questions are yes and yes for both questions, your patient almost certainly has peripheral artery disease. That has a very high positive predictive value. The problem is classic claudication is not the common manifestation of PAD. And patients with PAD, we've learned through the work of Alan Hirsch and Mary McDermott and others, have what we call atypical leg symptoms, not classic claudication. They don't answer yes and yes, but they have pain that does come on with walking. It lasts beyond 10 minutes. Maybe it doesn't always come on with walking. Maybe they just have a problem walking, or maybe they have numbness in their feet like the patient presented in the case. So beware of atypical symptoms, and then, of course, ischemic rest pain. After the history, we're going to do a thorough vascular exam, and this is my very thorough vascular exam. I'm checking bilateral blood pressures. I'm listening for Bruise. I'm feeling the abdominal aorta. I'm listening for abdominal and femoral Bruise. I'm feeling the lower extremity pulses. But, you know, granted, you may not have time in a 10-minute office visit to do all of this, what would I do for a really focused exam? Well, I'd probably do two things. I would certainly take off the shoes and socks and inspect the feet. There's nothing sadder than seeing a patient in vascular clinic with a non-healing ulcer critical limb ischemia who saw another doctor within the past week or two, and nobody even bothered to take their socks and shoes off. So you have to take off the socks, the shoes, and look at the feet. And then if you're going to do one maneuver on physical exam, the most accurate for detecting PAD is palpating the posterior tibial pulse. It's not perfect in terms of its accuracy, but it is more accurate than the dorsalis pedis pulse. And certainly if it's abnormal, that would make you suspect PAD. Okay, I want to say a word about pulses. We should all use the same language in describing pulses. This is how the PAD guidelines, we have Dr. Gerhard Herman here who shared these guidelines, told us we should grade pulses. A normal pulse is a 2, a diminished pulse is a 1, absent pulse is 0, and a hyperdynamic pulse or bounding would be a 3. And so these are the history and physical findings suggestive of PAD. We've already talked about the history with claudication and atypical leg symptoms, symptoms of critical limb ischemia. And then on physical exam, it's a pulse deficit, a vascular bruit, obviously a wound, gangrene, or potentially other findings which are less sensitive and specific, such as elevation pallor or hair loss. I probably would not rely on those. Okay, so next we're going to get the resting ABI when indicated, and what do our guidelines say? They give a class 1 recommendation that in patients with those history or physical findings suggestive of PAD, the resting ABI, either without or with segmental pressures and waveforms, is recommended. And a class 2A recommendation for those patients who are at risk for PAD but don't have history or physical exam findings, such as your polyvascular patient, measurement of the ABI is reasonable. No benefit if you don't have risk factors for PAD and you don't have history or physical manifestations. Okay, so now how do we do the ABI? This is the cornerstone of PAD diagnosis. It can be done in the office with just a handheld Doppler and a sphygmomanometer. It has to be done in the supine position. Legs need to be at the level of the heart, otherwise you're going to get a falsely elevated ABI. You also have to have the patient at rest, and you basically measure blood pressures in all four extremities. For reimbursement purposes, you do need a waveform of some sort, either Doppler or plethysmographic, in addition to the ankle brachial index, but you can do a simple ABI in the office just with a Doppler and a blood pressure cuff. How you do the calculation, you measure the blood pressures in both arms. You use the higher of the two arms for your denominator. And then down at the ankle, you use the higher of the two ankle pressures as measured at the posterior tibial or the dorsalis pedis artery, the higher of the two for the numerator. Okay, and you use the same arm for denominators on both sides, and then the higher of the two ankle pressures for the numerator. So in this case, we'd use 120 for the denominator, the higher of the two arms. This patient has some subclavian stenosis. On the right side, we'd have 68 for our numerator, and on the left side, 136. Very, very easy to do. Takes about 5 to 10 minutes to complete. And again, all you need is a handheld Doppler and a blood pressure cuff. These are the standardized interpretive criteria for ABI. Abnormal ABI is less than or equal to 0.9. We really don't have false positives for abnormal ABI. So if you have an abnormal ABI, you're in either limb, your patient has PAD. A normal is 1 to 1.4. 0.91 to 0.99 is in the borderline category. About half of those folks do have PAD if you do additional investigations. And then an ABI above 1.4 is not extra good blood flow to the lower extremity. It's actually stiff, calcified, non-compressible vessels and falsely elevated ankle pressure. So you need another test to rule out PAD, and those folks need to go to the vascular lab. So when do you need to refer to the vascular lab? Because, you know, in all honesty, again, handheld Doppler, blood pressure cuff, you can be diagnosing PAD right in your office. But when do you need additional testing? Well, I think when you have those non-compressible vessels, you need additional testing such as toe brachial index and waveforms. When you have suspected critical limb ischemia, these folks should not just be evaluated with an ABI in the office. They really need vascular lab assessment because non-compressible vessels are very prevalent in that population. So you're going to need to get the ABI, the toe brachial index, and also waveforms as well. When PAD is suspected in someone with symptoms, but the ABI is normal or borderline at rest, in those patients, you're going to want to do exercise ABI testing. And then when you have known PAD with abnormal ABIs, but you want to get additional information, you want to get an exercise test to see functional limitation, or you want to do segmental pressures and waveforms to try to localize disease, and for the patient with severe limitation or someone who didn't respond to exercise, see if they're a candidate for revascularization. And then briefly, this is what exercise testing looks like. We obtain ABIs at rest, then the patient walks. We monitor for any symptoms. This patient walked 5 minutes on the protocol but had calf burning during the protocol. We get ABIs after, immediately after exercise. They fell to zero, so clearly that calf burning was due to peripheral artery disease. And then I won't go into detail here, but this is what segmental pressures and waveforms look like, and it lets us get anatomic information, subset anatomically. Does this patient have aortoiliac disease, maybe a more favorable profile for endovascular revascularization? Is it femoral popliteal disease? Is it multi-level disease? And to learn more about diagnosing PAD, please, and managing PAD in general, please go to the PAD guideline. Thank you.
This has been the ACC CardiaCast, your latest education from the American College of Cardiology. Go to acc.org to find this and other additional resources related to today's show.